This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, Tiger fans. You know what's more frustrating than a bases-loaded double play? When your small business is striking out with technology problems. That's why our good buddy, Brett Danis, created Summit Tech Partners. Brett's a Michigan guy through and through and a lifelong Tigers fan. And Summit provides the perfect relief pitcher for your IT needs. While other services throw you generic fastballs, Brett's team will scout your business and develop a customized game plan specifically for your small business.
While you're keeping track of ERA and RBIs, Brett's team will handle your IT infrastructure. His team will monitor your systems like a hawk-eyed umpire, catching problems before they become major league disasters. Summit has a full roster of IT services that'll keep your business safe and running smoothly, so you can spend less time troubleshooting and more time watching torque bombs.
Visit homerun.support today for your free consultation.
Summit Tech Partners, where your small business is always the MVP.
CXG believes in the visual art of storytelling, whether it's through film, video, live events, or podcasts just like this one. Our mission is to connect audiences through powerful, authentic stories that leave a lasting impact. CXG is proud to support the Litter Box because great stories deserve to be seen and heard. Learn more at cxgfilms.com.
You're listening to The Litter Box, a Detroit Tigers podcast with your hosts, Chet West and Bill Patterson. Here's what's on deck for this episode.
Again, another series win, and what a difference just a few weeks makes.
These guys, this is a strong lineup right now. Go for it.
C-Mac got his all-star nod.
One of the things that we got to touch on right now, though, is the Major League Baseball draft, which is on Sunday.
Tigers fans, Litterbox listeners, another three-game set and another Tigers winning the series, taking 2 out of 3 against the Tampa Rays. They won 5-1 on Monday, July 7th, and then they won 4-2 on Tuesday, July 8th. Unfortunately, they could not take game 3 and lost 7-3 yesterday, which was the finale. But again, another series win, and what a difference just a few weeks makes. I just remember Chet and I discussing how bad we felt and how exhausted the bullpen was and how beat up the Tigers were when they had to go down to Tampa Bay the last time they faced the Rays. And the results were as expected. They took 1 out of 3, but now they've evened the series with the Rays for the year. The pitching looked great. The bullpen was good in spurts. It also had some opportunities for improvement, but that's what bullpens do. And then overall, the hitting's been just timely, and the Tigers are coming together as a team that looks like the best team in baseball, and they are rolling into the All-Star break. Chet, what are your thoughts?
I enjoyed this series immensely in the first two games. I thought they played very spirited, uplifting baseball. It was one of those where your text group with the guys is, oh, I love this team. You're so good, boy. You had the game 2 home run from Cole Keith that kind of pushed him ahead and solidified things. The first game was a little bit more of a, I don't want to call it like a beat down per se, because I don't think it was a beat down. It was 5-1 game, but still a fun game, and it was well in hand. Keiter Montero probably had his best outing, would you say, of his of this season, at least 2025?
Yeah. He went 6 for game 1. He pitched 6 innings, allowed 4 hits, 1 earned run. He only walked 1 and struck out 4. I would definitely say that was his best outing of the year. And then Holton, Hanafy, and Vest did what they did to close it out
against a good pitcher in Shane Baz. I mean, we were going up against a guy who's He's a flamethrower. He's a good
pitcher. He gave us fits last time.
Yeah, gave us fits last time. We got to him a little bit better this time. So why don't we, you want to jump into game one? Give me your thoughts here.
Colt Keith, that's where the thoughts are. Colt Keith had himself a great game one.
At the top of the lineup.
Yeah. Yeah. He was 3-for-4, 2 runs, an RBI home run. And I can't help but think, as much as we've loved Gleyber Torres being our second baseman every day this season, I mean, he's starting the All-Star game. I just feel bad for Colt Keith that he's been a man without a home all season.
Yeah.
He was the DH this game. He did bat leadoff, and he's looking great there. I've struggled a little bit with this because I think Torres is such a professional hitter that he's a natural to bat leadoff. But overall, this lineup completely got the job done, and I wouldn't be surprised if this is not our ideal or AJ Hinch's ideal lineup for most matchups going forward. You had Keith batting leadoff and again playing DH, Torres at second, batting second. In the three-hole, McKinstry in right field, Riley Green batting cleanup and left. Torque in the five spot playing first. In Torque's first base, he is a defensive wizard.
Yeah.
For a man his size, he really is nimble, not only on the base paths, but he is with the glove as well. Six spot, Dylan Dingler. Again, we don't have enough superlatives to talk about how great he's played this year. And then the bottom three gets a little dicey. Parker Meadows in center field. Parker, we're just waiting for you to hit. Everything else you do is fantastic.
We need him to pull a Colt Keith. We need him to surge here.
Yeah. And then Trey Sweeney, who we've documented enough, just isn't really hitting to the
best ability. He was the hole in this lineup, pretty much.
And then Javier Baez also had a pretty good outing.
Yeah.
Two RBIs, went 1-for-4, generated a run, had a dinger. So that's kind of your game one nutshell. Like I said, the bullpen was good. Holton got, you know, 3 outs, pitched an inning. Hanafy pitched an inning, got allowed a hit, but struck out one. And then Will Vest did what Will Vest does. With the exception of he walked one. Interestingly enough, this is just pure Tigers win. Not only do they get timely hitting, they get just a couple home runs scattered through the lineup. That being one from Colt Keith, one from Z-Mac, and then one from Javier Baez. They also only allowed 2 walks. And that is going to be a running theme that you're going to see and hear from us going forward in the year. This pitching staff just doesn't walk opposing batters.
Now, when they do, they get in trouble, but you're right. They don't walk them very often.
Not when they win, that's for sure. Anything else you'd like to talk about on game one?
Only the fact that as of that game, and we'll get into Colt a little more because this was kind of his series in a lot of ways.
It really was.
Colt's average is up into the mid-260 area right now. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about him toiling down in like the 230, 240 and not seeming to be able to get out of that. He is now very hitterish these days. His OPS is almost 800. So we're very fortunate in the fact that we have multiple guys in that range now. You've got Gleyber, you've got Colt, you've got Zach McKinstry playing above that, Riley playing above that. Spencer Torkelson's got a 235 average, but his OPS is 828.
His OPS is ridiculous at this point.
It's crazy. Dylan Dingler in the same air, and he's a catcher. We'll take that all day long. Parker Meadows and Trey Sweeney, we've talked about them. They got some catching up to do. But Javier is up there with them in that 279 average with a 768 OPS. I mean, these guys, this is a strong lineup right now. And we talk about adding pieces in the coming weeks. I don't know. I don't know if we need pieces in the lineup right now that badly. Should we go to game two?
Yeah, a couple things that I do want to comment on as we enter game two. It was a Jack Flaherty start, and he did actually generate a quality start. He went 6.1 innings. He did allow 7 hits. He did allow 2 earned runs.
They hit him, but he got 8 Ks.
He had 8 Ks, and he had an excellent outing.
Yeah.
And he only walked 1. So again, you're going to see a running theme here, Tigers fans. In a 4-2 win, the only walk allowed was Jack Flaherty. Tommy Cannelly came in. He didn't make it an inning, but he did what he did to get Flaherty out of a little bit of trouble there.
Yep.
And in the 7th, and then Tyler Holton came in. I don't know how he does it. He literally doesn't allow a hit. He doesn't walk anybody. He doesn't allow earned runs, and he doesn't strike anybody out. But
he pitches a lot of innings for us, and he strings them together in days. He's a strong horse.
Yeah,
man.
And then Will Vest came in and had an absolute...
He gave up a hit, but he shut him down.
He was
throwing...
Ks. It was, yeah, 3 Ks. He was throwing fire.
He was feeling it.
Going back to Cole Keith's coming out party, a 2-for-3. He did have a walk, 3 RBIs. Another dinger generated a run. He batted leadoff again. Torres was in the two hole. Basically, you're seeing the same lineup here, except for what happened was Z-Mac was moved down in the lineup. So Torque took over the four hole. Green was in the three hole. Perez was your right fielder in the five hole. Dingler stayed in the six. And then you had Z-Mac in the seventh. And he had a good game. He walked twice, generated 2 runs. Unfortunately, it was 0-for-2, but I'll take the 2 walks, you know, any day of the week. He played a solid, serviceable third base. And then in the eight hole, we had, again, our center field problem still seems to be vexing this team, not defensively, but since Javier Baez isn't in center field, we're not really getting a lot of offensive production. Mm-hmm. Matt Vierling is batting below 200 and looks like he is a player that needs more time, a la Parker Green Meadows, to acclimate to the big leagues. And then Javier batted cleanup, didn't have his most spectacular day, but it wasn't needed for to win, and the Tigers look good doing it. What other thoughts do you have?
So Cole Keith pushes his OPS above 800 in this game. He's going 2-for-3, 3 RBIs. I mean, I'm start looking at what he's done, and the only thing I can hope for is that Parker Meadows, Matt Vierling can kind of go along the same trajectory. We were giving up on Cole Keith at the beginning of the season. We were ready to mail. We were like, he's stuck. Something's wrong. And I kept preaching patience because, hey, he had a position change. This is going to be different for him. He's bouncing all over the diamond. He's DHing. He's playing first base, playing second base. I have this strange feeling next season, these positions are probably going to work themselves out a little better. He's probably going to have more of a permanent home. I don't see Gleyber Torres re-signing with the Tigers. Sorry, anybody who wanted him to re-sign with the Tigers. I think he's going to get a good deal to go elsewhere. Cole Keith's going to have more of a solidified position, and we're going to watch him sort of ascend into that star player role. That's my prediction. Maybe it doesn't happen. I hope it does. Right? You look at the Riley Greens, you look at the McKinstries and everything that they're doing. Cole Keith surging right now is literally winning games for this team at this point.
Exactly. Where do you envision Cole Keith, though, next year? What is your preferred permanent home?
This is because a bizarre one now. Like, yeah, if Torque was flailing and not in the org or, you know, in the minors or being designated for assignment, which I think everybody kind of thought could happen based on how he'd played last season. I mean, I would say first base is fine for me. But Torque's been playing so good at first. And if we can keep him just on this level that he's at, I put Cole Keith at second base. Now, he has played some third base. And he has done it well enough that we could just slot him in at third base for the season at this point. So he's, you know, in a lot of ways, he's not Zach McKinstry versatile. I don't see him in the outfield anytime soon. But if he has to bounce a little between the corner spots or between second and third just to keep things going, I'm fine. I just think it would do him some good to have a permanent position. I think it does any player. It just helps them kind of makes them feel more settled. They don't have to worry about prepping for their position that day or getting their mindset for third versus second versus first. They can work more on their hitting, but, you know, whatever. They're professionals. They figure it out, right? Jack Flaherty, the schizophrenic Jack Flaherty. You get one game, you get 6 1/3, 7 hits, 2 runs. Another game, he can't make it out of the first. I think that's kind of going to be what he's going to be all season long. We're going to get the good Jack Flaherty or the bad Jack Flaherty. And Ryan Pepiot gave us all we could handle once again, 6 innings, 2 runs. We were tied 2-2 going into the seventh, and that was when Colt broke it open with a 2-run homer. And I could not have been happier. He took a changeup. Next changeup was a little too high in the zone, and he crushed the daylights out of it. And that was pretty much the game. Want to hit game 3?
Yeah, and one final thought on this. I think Cole Keith should be the everyday second baseman going into the 2026 season, and the Tigers need to find themselves a third baseman or put Z-Mac there to allow him to have some permanency as well. I love his Swiss Army knife approach. He's easily my favorite Tiger, but I admire what AJ Hinch and the staff is doing with the versatility. I also think that players need homes and in a permanent spot there. And given that the DH rule has been in effect now for a few seasons and that there's always going to be a DH, no matter where you play American League, National League, there's enough room to get everybody in this lineup incorporated. Another thing, I couldn't agree with you more. Gleyber Torres bet on himself this year and took an under market deal. Really, the Tigers were the only deal out there for him. And I imagine somebody is going to bet heavy on him. And that's an interesting thing. Just before we dive into game three, I'm rereading Moneyball. I got about halfway through it yesterday. And I've never seen a sport still to this date like MLB that pays for past performance more so than future. And every text chain we're in, friends, family, cousins are like, hey, just, you know, it's not our money. Pay Torres.
Exactly.
Pay Skubal. And I'm like, Skubal's going to be 30 at the end of going into the 2027 season. That's what I don't like about it. Yeah, he's pitching otherworldly now, but the Tigers are getting that for arbitration money. They're not paying $50 million, $40 million a year for that. And the same thing with Torres. I believe his contract was, what, $15 million this year?
Yeah.
And, I mean, they're getting every at-bat and penny out of him for that. And one of the best parts about this Tigers team long-term is outside of the Javi Baez contract, because we can't call him Javier when we talk his contract, is about bloated it is.
No.
They don't have a bad contract. There's not a bad contract on this team. There's not an albatross. 100%.
They've been really responsible to spending, and it has tortured fans at times, and it will torture them going forward. I don't think they're ever going to be a spendy franchise again.
No, I feel, and you and I have talked about this offline, I feel like they're going to model, they're going to be responsible like the Rays in Guardians, but they're going to spend more than those teams because
they're going to be like a Houston, maybe something like that.
Houston's still a huge market, though. That's the fourth biggest market in the U.S., so I don't know
that they don't spend.
And they've also been rolling the COVID season of 2020. Houston's on a 10-year heater right now. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about game three. It was a 7-3 loss. Things were looking good. Reese Olson was out there. What do you call that when your cheeks get red, like from exercise?
Getting flushed.
There's an actual medical name for it, but let's just call it flushed for time because I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
He has it every time. He looks like a little leaguer out there. It's so great.
Yeah.
5 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned runs. He did
like hot flashes or something.
Let's not go there. Again, trouble with the fair sex on that one. Brant Herder didn't make it an inning, but did what he had to do. Then Chase Lee came in, and this is really the story of this game, Chet. Chase Lee made it a third of an inning, allowed 5 hits, 4 earned runs, and that's where the game got away from the Tigers. Again, the only walks they allowed was Reese Olson over 5 innings. He had 2. They really weren't doing any swing and miss. Reese Olson had 1 strikeout. Brant Herder had 1 strikeout, and then we'll get to who closed it out with the last 3 innings. A little surprise appearance by our guy, Dietrich Enns.
Way to eat some innings, Dietrich.
Yeah, 3 innings, 4 hits, 2 strikeouts. He, I saw that he was being kept up at the big league level, and for the life of me, I couldn't figure out if it was another spot start to alleviate your biggest grievance in the 2025 Tigers season, your least favorite thing, you know, a bullpen start. And it wasn't that at all. I think they found a position for him. Small sample size, but
he's the Kenta Maeda innings eater.
Yeah, I like it. He's way better than Kenta Maeda.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Chase Lee, though. Is this my question to you and to our listeners is this the beginning of the end, or was it an aberration? Because
I hope it was an aberration.
Same.
He's been everybody in the bullpen's blown up so far, except for Chase Lee. And I don't think Will Vest has blown up yet, but we don't want him blowing up based on the role that he carries. Chase Lee hadn't had his explosion yet, his implosion, I should call it, actually. And he did here. 3rd of an inning, 5 hits, 4 runs. Got a home, got tagged for a dinger. He threw 20 pitches and did all that damage. It was coming. At some point, it was coming. His sidearm delivery I like because it throws a different look to the hitters. But as you alluded to, I believe it was a podcast or two ago, he's due for an implosion, and when's it going to happen? So good call. You kind of sensed it coming. He just doesn't, like the rest of much of our bullpen, he is not a strikeout pitcher. He's not a swing and miss guy. And everybody from here to the top of the Rensen Center is asking for a strikeout pitcher at the trade deadline. We need a bullpen guy who can get guys out. We need a bullpen guy with swing and miss.
Swing and miss. That's what we need.
It's, we've tried a few things that have failed with that, and a couple guys that we thought might be that. I think that is the most realistic trade target. How much quality we will get is the big question.
Well, it depends on what we want to give up.
I know.
What is given up is what will come back in return. Mm-hmm. And I welcome.
And mind you, you're competing with everybody needs this. Okay. Everybody that is competing for a position in this league right now that is going to be a buyer needs bullpen help. So
let's go through that just for our listeners really quick. Do the Phillies need it?
Yeah.
Do the Cubs need it?
Yes.
Do the Mets need it? Would the Dodgers take it? They probably don't need it.
They probably don't need it, but I'm sure they would take it if it was there.
Giants.
Yeah.
Padres.
Yes, they need it.
Astros.
Astros, yes. Yeah.
Yankees.
Yes.
Blue Jays.
So let's just think it's everybody. Okay. It's everybody. You made your point. But I like one team sticks out to me that's going to be a huge competitor because they kind of need everything we need, and that's the Cubs. And we know the Cubs near and dear to our heart. They also, their front office is in do or die time right now. So they're going to be willing to shell some stuff out here for some help to try and go on a run. And rightfully so. I mean, all their contracts are up. You've got, you're basically, well, you're not the Tigers of the NL, but you're pretty close. You're running the show on the National League side of things, save maybe a team or two. And they need the exact same things we do, and they have a bigger pocketbook. They can handle taking people on, and they have a decent minor league system, a very good minor league system. They have great systems. So they're going to be able to offer monetarily and prospect-wise as much or more than we are. So you've got a direct competitor right there.
Do you think it comes into play, though, because anybody that's being pursued will have a no trade clause going to a pitcher's park like Comerica?
It could be. That could be
versus
it.
A park that plays as a pitcher's park if that the wind's blowing in and then plays as a hitter's park if the wind's blowing out.
I mean, Chicago's a bigger market. If you're a player, do you want to play there? Like, it depends. Those are two very,
there's how many baseball players? I mean, baseball, it's not basketball, meaning NBA.
At any rate, I get what you're saying. It's not going to come down to market as much for these guys, but like you're playing for the Cubs, playing for the Tigers. Okay, fine. But we're still competing with a lot of people for the same tools.
It also makes me so happy that the Tigers aren't in a lame duck status with the front office.
A little more stability to tout.
Well, the fact that Tom Ricketts and the Ricketts family hasn't extended Jed Hoyer and staff is a little surprising, given that this is basically what they wanted. So
I
still don't think the Cubs operate as a big market team as much as they should. Mm-hmm. So
nope, I agree.
I think there's a lot more pressure on the Cubs and their fandom to do something bigger than the Tigers in any way, shape, or form.
And I think there's pressure on them to make moves, and they got to get the guys they need. So we got competition there. I want to wrap
thing
up
from
this
yesterday.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was going to wrap this up, but go for
it. Got his all-star nod now that injuries and all that have been
good for Z-Mac.
Sorted. So tip of the cap to Z-Mac for that. And then I don't know his name, but the Tigers bat boy was elected to the all-star game, and they made a huge push for him to get there. Now, mind you, when I think of a bat boy, Chet, I think of somebody that has a 4.0, has to miss a lot of school because obviously they're on the right, they're on the road.
But Fur has like the best job in the world. And I don't know if he's still in school.
This guy, no, he's got a beard,
He's got a full grown beard. I don't know if you're worried about. So let's put a little respect on the guy. First of all, he is a student. He's in college. His name is Frankie Boyd.
Frankie.
All right. They had a huge push for him to become to get nominated as the bat boy for the All-Star game. Like all the players were doing those promos and stuff. He goes to Eastern Michigan. So kind of the enemy for us Western guys, not like a Central guy, but, you know, doesn't have quite the stink on it. But Eastern is still a foe of sorts. But apparently he's bat boy extraordinaire. Good for him. That'll be a cool experience. But back to Z-Mac, because I want to kind of hone in on this a little more. He went 2-for-4 yesterday, two doubles, and played his butt off as he usually does. They announced that, and I think like Benetti kind of did the initial announcement during the game. I had to go back and watch it because I missed it. And he seemed to get emotional about it. Like, I feel like Benetti is really connecting with this team in a lot of ways.
100%. Did you see what they did post-game yesterday?
Yeah. Yeah.
They had ice cream sundaes. Yeah. And then I don't want to get off Z-Mac too quickly.
No.
Let's also talk about the fact that now the Tigers are finally getting bandwagon fans. I still don't know why he was there, but John C. Reilly was at the game yesterday.
Apparently he's best friends with Jack White, and it was Jack White's 50th birthday.
That was the only reason he was there.
And where is Jack the day at the Tiger game with John C. Reilly, of all people?
He was in a box, and John C. Reilly sang him happy birthday, and then went
John
up.
C. Reilly threw out the first pitch.
Yeah, and he was nothing short of fantastic. And I will say this, I think Benetti's having the time of his life because
he's loving it.
What
an upgrade. You could be with the Sox right now.
There was not a Jack White showing up to White Sox games recently. I know that Chance the Rapper and some other luminaries are Sox fans. They weren't showing, though. Kanye West wasn't hanging out on the South Side for a weekend series for his birthday.
No, and it's a great thing. It's one of these things you see. Team starts winning, the celebrities start coming out. Detroit is really good with that. Like, I mean, celebrities just start coming out of the woodwork the second the Lions or Tigers start achieving something, or the Pistons or the Red Wings for that matter.
It was nice, too, that it wasn't Jeff Daniels.
You know, Jeff needs a break. He's a great guy. Don't get me wrong. Love seeing Jeff Daniels at the games. But somebody else had to pick up the mantle for a little bit. I mean, Jeff's probably got projects or something he's working on.
Of course.
Zach McKinstry, though, all-star nod. Good for him. He deserves it. Guy is a grinder. Plays 87 different positions. I love it. Glad that he got that and that it was announced during the game last night. That's pretty cool for him.
Are we going to go down to the farm?
I think we need to. Well, we're not going to quite go down to the farm, per se. The farm talk's coming. The believe us, we keep teasing a couple concepts here on the pod. We keep teasing kind of a down on the farm podcast for you guys. That's coming. That's coming in the next week or two. We want to get that out and kind of prep everybody for the trade deadline because there's some players that you might not see on the team anymore. But there's also a trade deadline podcast that we have also kind of teased out there. That'll happen too. We're going to do a before and after, of course. One of the things that we got to touch on right now, though, is the Major League Baseball draft, which is on Sunday. So the Major League Baseball draft is not like the football draft. It's not like the basketball draft. It is very unpredictable as to what will happen. You got guys that could have gone in the second round that end up going in the top 12 for some reason. You got guys that were supposed to go in the top 10 sliding all the way to the beginning of the second round or end of the first. It's kind of nuts. I mean, the first three or four players are usually a lock to be the first three or four players. It can jumble around. Number one might end up being number three. Number two might end up being number four. Number four could end up being number one, all depending on team needs and whether they think they can sign a guy or not, all sorts of stuff. So there's all these variables that go into this. It could get real complicated if we wanted it to.
Can I add a few notes to this just because?
Yeah, please do.
For everybody, please do pick up Moneyball if you're interested or want to learn more about the draft. Here's a couple of things about baseball's draft. A, it's not televised, you know, like the NFL and NBA is. There's no ping pong balls. There's no per se lottery. To Chet's point, the top guys are usually...
It is televised on the MLB channel if you want to watch it there, but...
Now.
Nationally.
That's recent, you know. Yeah. The other thing with this is each team, there's slots that you have a maximum amount of dollars to contribute to that spot, but the smaller market teams typically spend well under that. So a big thing is staying clear of, like, say, Scott Boras guys that you know won't be able to sign. I don't mean to pick on Scott Boras, but we can pick on him freely because his guys typically don't. And so you've got a pool of money. So let's say it's $20 million. And then you have to fill your slots with that, with as many guys that you A, like, B, think you're going to sign, and C, you know, think you can develop and go from there. So it's not really a ton of science. It's really much more a crapshoot than any other probably draft out there. But you're also afforded so many picks that, you know, the washout rate's high. That being said, Scott Harris has been prepping for this. Jason Benetti and Andy Dirks had him on. He did an interview with Peaches. He did an interview with Todd Jones, and he seems to really, really get excited by this, which I think is awesome. I never got the impression that previous regimes, looking at you, El Avila, really cared all that much about this.
Well, this is how these guys are going to build. This is how they're going to build teams, is through the draft. They're not going to be doing big free agent signings. So this is like their, this is the way we see what's coming, because this is their strategy.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what else you want to add on this. So, but
let me throw in kind of just a few takes here. A few things I've learned over the last couple of days and weeks and months. If you look at recent years, the Tigers are now honing in very much. They actually are mirroring the Cubs strategy to a degree. They're signing guys up the middle. Think shortstop, second base, center field. They're really concentrating on position players up the middle and pitching to some degree or another. But lately, it's been more position players up the middle. Those position players up the middle end up being pretty versatile. Shortstops can play third base. They can play outfield. Second baseman can play first base. They can play shortstop. They can play third base. You know, you can move these guys all over the place. They're highly skilled fielders. They will find a home from a position standpoint. And then you're just looking at the bat from there. Do they have the bat to play at the professional level? So they've been really good on getting contact with a little power up the middle. That's been their kind of what they're honing in on. They've also gone out and picked up pitchers too. Some starting arms, some power arms. Not shockingly, one of the things that we're looking at this year is left-handed power pitchers who are big. There are a couple in the till here that they could end up grabbing. I would like to go through with a few of the projections. Did you have anything else you wanted to touch on as far as their strategy goes?
No.
Okay.
Outside of the fact that the oldest adage in baseball has always been get as many shortstops as you can. Typically, the best athletes on the field are shortstops if they're not pitchers.
Yeah.
And to your versatility point, you nailed it on the head. Please go ahead.
So I'll give you a quick little primer here. The top two players for this year, a gentleman by the name of Ethan Holliday. You probably recognize that name. From a position player side, it's Ethan Holliday. He's a shortstop out of Stillwater, Oklahoma. He is the brother of Jackson Holliday, who is super stud for the Baltimore Orioles and son of Matt Holliday. So baseball runs in the family there a little bit, as you could imagine, and he's got all the pedigree and the skill sets. He is projected to be the top position player.
He will not be a Tiger.
He will not be a Tiger. You will not see him. We have the 24th pick, thanks to a winning season last year. This is the first time the Tigers haven't drafted in like the top 12 since 2015 or 16, I guess. So there was a time when
it was
the draft,
a long rebuild.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a time when the draft had 50 rounds. They narrowed it down to 40 in 2012. We're down to 20 rounds now. So only 20 rounds for you guys out there. So this year, 24th pick, you're not getting Ethan Holliday. The top pitcher in the draft, who at one point was dangled out there as a possibility a ways back when people were doing their mock drafts a year ahead of time, is Cade Anderson. He is the top pitcher in the draft. He's a left-handed pitcher out of LSU. The Angels have the second pick in the draft. They're projected to grab him. Nationals and Angels have the top two picks. Those two guys could be interchangeable. If the Nationals decide they want a pitcher, they go one way. If the Angels decide they want to hit, whatever it may be. Outside of that, there's a guy by the name of Liam Doyle. Again, big left-handed pitcher for Tennessee. He's, you know, college guy. These guys are not going to touch the Tigers at the 24th pick. Unless something disastrous had happened in scouting or something along those lines, forget about these names. I am going down the draft a ways, and there's a couple of guys who stick out to me that could fall to us realistically. There's a shortstop out of Mississippi named JoJo Parker. He is projected to go in the top 10. I've seen some people say we could get him if he fell. This is where things start to get dicey and unpredictable. You get to that 10th pick and guys start launching up into there that don't normally, and then they fall. It doesn't matter that much when you're getting down into this area. I mean, to us, you're going to get a good player in the first round typically. Plenty of picks at number 24 have panned out. Okay. Nico Hoerner of the Cubs was a 24th pick, 2018. He's done pretty well. So we're going to have a chance to get somebody good at 24. What I'm looking at, and these are the options that I see from a pitching side of things. There's a gentleman by the name of Gage Wood, pitched at Arkansas. He's a righty. He is projected to go a little before our spot in most projections, but could fall to us at 24 easily. There's another guy, big 6'7" lefty named Cruz Schoolcraft. If that doesn't get you excited, I don't know what does. The name Cruz Schoolcraft. So you've got two pitchers there, lefty and a righty. Gage is a righty, Cruz is a lefty, who could be available to the Tigers at that 24th pick. Now, the guys I'm excited about, the guy I want them to get, is slated to go right in our area. His name is Slater DeBrun. He's out of Oregon. He is cut in the mold of Corbin Carroll. He's about 5'9", 170 pounds, like grease lightning speed, plays outfield, got power. So think Corbin Carroll on the Tigers. What's not to love there? Okay. Think, you know who he even kind of matches up with is a guy by the name of Stephen Kwan, who my esteemed colleague here loves and has an infatuation with. Another guy that they're looking at is Cason Cunningham. He's a shortstop out of San Antonio. Again, a smaller frame shortstop. So he's like 5'9", 5'10", 180, 190 pounds. I'm sure he'd be great. They actually comp him to McGonagall to a degree. So Cason Cunningham could be another name that you see getting drafted. So I'm thinking one of those four guys, Gage Wood, Cruz Schoolcraft, Cason Cunningham, Slater DeBrun. There's two position guys, two pitchers for you. Bill, do you have any other thoughts?
No. Good homework and legwork there, Chet. That is a good primer for the draft. I appreciate that.
I think that's about as deep as we can get without something crazy happening.
And we'll report, you know, what actually happens. In other news for current prospects, Kevin McGonagall, Max Clark, and Jose Bracino.
Osweh.
Are headed to the All-Stars Future game, but first they are leaving Grand Rapids and High A West Michigan for Double A and two-time defending Eastern League champion Erie Seawolves. So the Tigers did promote their first, second, and fourth ranked prospects, all within the MLB's pipeline top 100.
Max Clark already hit a home run at Double A.
And we'll be excited to see what happens. Scott Harris he hasn't even teased it. He said outright, if they continue to rake, they will be up on the 40-man roster before the year's out, especially if this lead within the American League Central continues to build. In other news and notes, for those that watch, the John Oliver show was allowed to alternate an identity for a minor league team. And for some weird reason, they picked Erie, and they are now calling him the Moon Mammoths for the fact that a mammoth skeleton was found there. It's in the Erie Museum, blah, blah, blah. And interestingly enough, the home debut after the All-Star break on July 18th, the Seawolves will be now known as the Moon Mammoths for a night. It's expected to be a sellout, and all three of these prospects will be there. So that's kind of what's going on down in the minors.
I can't wait to see what that logo looks like, the Moon Mammoths.
They teased it already. It's pretty good.
Be fantastic.
Yeah. So that kind of wraps up what I had previewing the next series. We have a very different Mariners team than last time we talked about them coming to town. The last time the Tigers faced them was in games 4, 5, and 6 of this season. So that was late March, early April. And the Tigers did take 2 out of 3. But again, that was before Cal Raleigh, a name that everyone should know, the American League starting catcher. He is basically a reincarnation of Johnny Bench. He is hitting for power, unlike any catcher that the American or National League has seen in decades. He is going to be a big storyline with it. The Mariners also have good frontline pitching. They have a pretty decent bullpen. And I think it's going to be a tough series. If the Tigers can take 2 out of 3 in this, I would consider that a huge win and try to limit Cal Raleigh's damage at the plate. We will get a Scooble start Saturday is what's scheduled. So if they can just win either the Friday.
I believe it's Friday is the start.
Oh, it's Friday now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's showing is Friday, but we'll see.
It's been back and forth on that. But yeah, hopefully the Tigers can keep doing what they've been doing, but I fully expect the Mariners to give him fits, and I expect Cal Raleigh to give him fits. We could even see something.
It's a heck of a way to end the first half because they are a tough team.
And the Tigers haven't intentionally walked anybody in God knows how long, and that could be part of the key to the series is limiting the damage that Cal Raleigh can do. He of, you know, already having 30 plus home runs and all that good stuff. So a couple other news and notes on that. I know you always want food. We didn't do it last time for Seattle. Seattle is famous for putting a condiment on their hot dogs that most other cities and certainly other ballparks do not do.
Do I want to hear about this?
Yeah, you do.
Okay.
It's cream cheese, and it's actually delicious. So it's a toasted bun, and they griddle the dogs pretty heavily. So it's almost a black dog, if you would, or a deep shade of brown.
I actually love that.
And then it's just a small, quick smear of cream cheese that melts very, very nicely into the toasted bun. And then you can put other toppings on it. I decided to go pure and just try it this way, and it was quite delicious. Grady was only about... 4 years old, he elected to just have his dog Chet style, aka plain.
That's a good man.
And enjoyed it as we took a rickshaw ride post Mariners A's on a day game some time ago in Seattle.
I feel like a rickshaw would be the way to get around Seattle sometimes. That seems fitting to me.
It was very apropos. And it was a delicious dog. It was recommended by a brother-in-law and sister-in-law that lived in Seattle for a number of years. And I wouldn't even say it's an acquired taste. I'd say it's something that everybody should probably try at home. Grab some Philadelphia cream cheese, however you like it, or maybe some from your favorite, deli and or bagel spot, and try this.
Why? I mean, you could do that at home. Just try that at home.
Exactly.
Burn the dog a little bit.
Yeah.
And then just slather the bun with cream cheese and plop it in there.
Yeah.
I love to burn my dogs. I always burn one. And then I bring them all in and I'm like, oh, that's mine.
Okay.
And the family's like, you can have it because I don't want it.
Nice. Very nice. So that's kind of our food preview on it. We'll do a deeper dive on pitching matchups and all that, possibly post. And we're heading into the All-Star break. Tigers are sending four people plus our guy, Frankie, the
facial haired bat boy.
I love it.
He's not a kid. He's like a college kid.
He's a grown man.
He's a grown man for crying out loud.
Do you think the Tigers probably wanted somebody that could run out of the clubhouse and go buy Chew and beer for them?
I mean, he's versatile, probably.
Yeah. He's the Zach McKinstry.
Send him up to the corner if you need to. You think he's leaving the dugout mid-game? You ever seen the guy work? He's like, cleans up everything. It's crazy. He runs all over the place. He's doing more running than some of the players during the game.
We're looking at you, Gleyber Torres.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got for us?
I'm done. I think that wraps up this episode nicely. We gave you the recap, the draft preview, and the Mariner preview. You guys got it all today. Do you have anything else you want to close with, Bill?
No, avoid Costco meatballs, Chet.
Avoiding Costco meatballs at all costs. That's some serious stuff. We'll get into that one later. If a ballpark has meatballs on the menu, I'll insert the whole story for you. At any rate, everybody enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the last series before the All-Star break. And we'll have some fun stuff for you during the All-Star break. Probably something along the lines of maybe a down on the farm. We'll see. Maybe a little recap of how our Tigers, our five guys, do in that All-Star game. But until next time, we'll talk to you and go Tigers. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of The Litter Box, a Detroit Tigers podcast. Thanks for hanging out with us. We're Bill and Chet. We'll be back soon with more Tigers talk. If you're enjoying the show, be sure to follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And hey, if you got a minute, leave us a quick review. Till next time, go Tigers.